Is he cute?
Excuse me?
Dunbar, is he cute?
Sir, if you're not going to take this seriously...
Is he handsome? Is he self-assured? Does he carry himself well? Does he look you in the eyes when you talk to him or down at the floor? Does he have good bones which suggest good breeding? Does he slouch or sit up? These are important questions that reveal a great deal about a man's character. Now, look, get over yourself for 2.5 seconds and tell me, is he cute?
And welcome to Rangers Guerrilla Media, Urban Jungle Warfare, Episode 2. Getting some media out to you. While we're still waiting for all the technical ends to be sorted out, so I'm recording this on a phone, so I don't want to hear about sound quality. I'm recording tonight from my hammock in the woods, which is great. It's really nice to be able to record something when I'm spending time doing the thing I do a lot of. So I'm in my newish hammock, and I've got my new tarp over the top of me. It's just stopped raining. So I thought I'd record something and it wouldn't be drowned out by the sound of the rain falling on the tarpaulin roof. So I'm out in the woods doing the news. So, off with the news. Some of the biggest names on the web have written to Peter Mandelson to express grave concerns about elements of the digital economy bill, thanks to Harlequin who sent this in. Facebook, Google, Yahoo and eBay object to a clause that say that could give government unprecedented and sweeping powers to amend copyright laws. We urge you to remove Clause 17 from your bill, the letter read. However, the government has said it believes the clause will future-proof online copyright laws. The law must keep pace with the technology so that the government can act if new ways to seriously infringing copyright develop in the future. A spokesperson for the Department of Business Innovation Skills, the BIS, another one of these bloody organisations littered throughout our government, the consortium believe that if Clause 17, as it is known, is approved, it will give any future Secretary of State the ability to amend copyright laws as they see fit. This power could be used, for example, to introduce additional technical measures to increase the monitoring of user data, even where no illegal practice has taken place, the letter read. This would discourage innovation and impose unnecessary costs, representatives of firms wrote. Others have suggested that the clause could be used to tweak laws so that search engines could not publish summaries of news stories in their results. BIS said that Clause 17 was a necessary extension of its plans to reduce copyright theft and that government would mould copyright laws to their needs were unfounded. Business will not wake up one morning to a world in which government has taken excessive digital powers, the spokesperson said. They never name these spokespeople. There are substantial constraints on how the power can be used within the requirements, with requirements for a consultation and votes in both Houses of Parliament before anything can happen. However, the consortium of companies say the clause is so broad-ranging that it would risk legitimate customer use of current technology as well as future developments. We all acknowledge that new business models need to emerge to support creative content, the letter from European and UK representatives of the firms reads. They are inherently risky and entrepreneurs rely heavily on there being a consistent and stable approach to copyright enforcement. This clause would inject an unprecedented level of uncertainty in this regard. Other groups, including US Digital Rights Group, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, have objected to it. Clause 17 is part of the government's digital economy bill outlined in the Queen's speech in November 2009. The bill includes a shake-up of the radio spectrum, a classification system for video games, and plans to tackle illegal file sharing. The so-called three strikes element of the bill would give regulator Ofcom new powers to disconnect persistent net pirates. The plans have proved controversial, with lobby organisation and the Open Rights Group urging people to contact their MP to oppose the plan. The bill will have its second reading in the House of Lords on the 2nd of December, so we've passed that, and it will have to go through various other readings and drafts before it becomes law. And as usual, all the links to the news stories will be on the running order, which will be published on the website www.rangers.com. You can download it for free. Everything we do is for free. So you can go and get that and a recording of this show and all our other stuff. Okay, next news story. What do cats do home alone? Cat cams have the answer, thanks to Kevin. Los Angeles. What do cats do when their owners are away? There was one way to find out. Cat cams. 50 house cats were given collar cameras that took a photo every 15 minutes. The results put a digital dent in some human theories. The digital dent? I don't think that. A dent. Let's excise that and take out stupid wording. In some human theories about catnapping, based on photos, about 22% of cat time was spent looking out of windows. 12% was used to interact with other family pets, and 8% was spent climbing on chairs or kitty condos. Just 6% of their hours were spent sleeping. What surprised me was how active the cats were. I believe that my three cats were sleeping during the day, said Jill Varel, an animal behavior scientist who collected the data for Nestle Purina, Petcare's Friskies brand of cat food. The 777 photos, weird number, studied by Villarreal showed the cats looking at a television, computer, DVDs and other media 6% of the time and hiding under tables 6% of the time. Coming in at 5% was playing with toys, eating or looking at food, finished at 4%. Will the cats get movie cameras next? We think we are in the think tank now, Villarreal said. That's brilliant. And it's actually posted on friskies.com. Brilliant. Scratchington Post. Oh dear. Anyway, I've always wondered what my cat gets up to. I think bitching and looking at the door takes up most of his time. The Scottish Government has signalled its intention to change the centuries-old law which prevents someone being tried for an offence for a second time, thanks to Schneelocker. It followed the publication of a Scottish Law Commission report into double jeopardy. The review recommended that any change in the law should not be imposed retrospectively. This would prevent Angus Sinclair being charged again with the World's End murders in Edinburgh 30 years ago. Justice Secretary Kenny McCaskill said the change was needed now and revealed that the Scottish Government planned to bring forward the new legislation at the earliest practicable opportunity. The family of one of the World's End victims said they were deeply disappointed that the Commission did not want any change in the law to be applied retrospectively. The Scottish Law Commission spent 2 years investigating the law on double jeopardy, which was changed in England and Wales in 2003. Since then, 6 cases have been returned to court, resulting in 3 convictions. The commission has been asked by Mr. McCaskill to consider whether the rule should be changed after the convicted murderer Sinclair was cleared of killing teenagers Helen Scott and Christine Erdl, who were last seen leaving the World's End pub in Edinburgh in 1977. Sinclair's trial collapsed in 2007 when Judge Lord Clark ruled that the Crown had insufficient evidence to proceed. A change in the law, which would allow retrials of people cleared of murder or rape, has all-party support at Holyrood, and the Commission has provided a draft bill for MSPs. However, it said any new law should not be retrospective, even if there was significant new evidence. Patrick Leyden, QC, lead commissioner on the review, said he believed that the basic principles behind double jeopardy should remain. He said it was up to Parliament to decide whether or not retrials could be held in serious cases where strong new evidence became available after the accused was acquitted. Ms. Leyden added, "The rule against double jeopardy has protected the citizens of Scotland against repeated prosecutions for hundreds of years. Essentially, it prevents the state from running a criminal prosecution system, heads we win, tails let's play again until you lose basis. So we are recommending that it should be kept and put into legislation." But Mr. Leyden said there was a division of opinion within the commission on whether there should be a possibility of a retrial on the basis of new evidence. He said it would not be right to allow the state, with its large resources, to try again to get a conviction. On the other hand, if there is genuinely new evidence, it is open to Parliament to take the view that justice demands another trial. If the Scottish Parliament does decide to introduce the possibility of retrial, the Commission recommended that it should be confined to only the most serious offences, rape or murder, but that ministers should be able to seek Parliament's consent to add further offences in the future. In a statement, Helen Scott's father, Moran, said it is of extreme importance that the victims of crime and the Scottish public have complete confidence in the ability of Scotland's criminal justice system to deliver justice. In our opinion, today's recommendations by the Scottish Law Commission fall far short of meeting these expectations. We are in complete agreement that it would be wrong to be allowed to prosecute people indefinitely, but the law has to be fit for purpose. And with the advances in science and technology, we find it hard to believe that it is recommended that any proposed changes should not be applied retrospectively. He said it was now up to the Scottish Parliament to decide the final chapter of the World's End case, and added, "We hope that their decision is the right one. Mr. McCaskill and the Scottish Government would consider the Commission's recommendations carefully, but said there is a clear direction of travel, and I want to ensure Scotland has a double jeopardy law which is fit for the 21st century. I believe that Scotland's approach to double jeopardy should reflect the interest of justice and not just the accused. We will now fully assess the Scottish Law Commission report before responding, but the intention is to legislate at the earliest practicable opportunity because change is needed and needed now." Scottish Labour Justice spokesman Richard Baker said, "I'm disappointed that the Law Commission have not recommended a change in the law. The failure of the prosecution of Angus Sinclair for his horrific crimes demonstrated the clear need to update the law in this area. Labour has been calling for a reform of double jeopardy for some time, as the justice system needs to be rebalanced to take more account of the needs of the victims of crime." And Schneerlock has a comment. He said, the head of the commission has produced a report on the matter. Patrick Layden QC offered the following rather succinct reason for why this is an important legal principle. Essentially, it prevents the state from running the criminal prosecution on a heads we win, tails let's play again until you lose basis. So we are recommending that it should be kept. Oh, I think we've already said that. But he said, well, consider, for example, the case of Emmett Till, an African-American who was murdered in Mississippi, whose white murderers were acquitted by an all-white jury in the obviously racist decision, whose murderers later on freely admitted they had, in fact, murdered him. And she said, I haven't made up my mind to a point where I could voice an opinion on this for myself yet, but for those curious, I'll note that in Germany, the, oh dear, Strafprozentordnung, the STPO, lists the circumstances under which a criminal trial can be resumed to the disfavour of the defendant. In section 362, there's four possibilities, and a credible confession in or out of court is among them. And there's a link on our running order to a Wikipedia article on the murder of Emmett Till, which was amazingly horrific. I well recommend you go and check that out. Essentially, a young black man was beaten to death for supposedly whistling and talking to a white woman. And they beat him to death, set him on fire, and buried him in a swamp. And then, after they were acquitted by an all-white racist jury, they freely admitted almost everywhere and, you know, in the newspapers that they had in fact killed him. But under the double jeopardy law, he couldn't be tried. So I did go and check that out. It was very interesting. Right, and our final news story of today. In Newark, Delaware, finding characteristic witnesses when you are 6 years old is not easy. But there was just Zachary Christie last week at a school disciplinary committee hearing with his karate instructor and his mother's fiancé by his side to vouch for him. This is again thanks to Schneedlock. Zachary's offence? Taking a camping utensil that can serve as a knife, fork and spoon to school. He was so excited about recently joining the Cub Scouts that he wanted to use it at lunch. School officials concluded that he had violated their zero tolerance policy on weapons, and Zachary was suspended and now faces 45 days in the district's reform school. Awesome. It just seems unfair, Zachary said, pausing as he practiced writing lowercase letters with his mother, who is homeschooling him while the family tries to overturn his punishment. Spurred in part by the Columbine and Virginia Tech shootings, many school districts around the country adopted zero-tolerance policy on the possession of weapons on school ground. More recently, there has been growing debate as to whether the policies have gone too far. But based on the code of conduct for the Christina School District, where Zachary is a first grader, this is the first year of school that will put him right off, school officials had no choice. Bollocks. They had to suspend him because, regardless of the possessor's intent, knives are banned. I bet the knife on that thing's like a butter knife. But the question on the minds of residents here is why do school officials not have more discretion on such cases? Why did they even bring it? You know, there's still people being fucking Jobsworth there. Zachary wears a suit and tie some days to school by his own choice because he takes school so seriously, said Debbie Christie, Zachary's mother, who started a website, helpzachary.com, in hopes of recruiting supporters to pressure the local school board at its next open meeting on Tuesday. He's not some sort of threat to his classmates. Still, some school administrators argue that it is difficult to distinguish innocent pranks and mistakes from more serious threats, and that policies must be strict to protect students. There is no parent who wants to get a phone call where they hear their child no longer has two good seeing eyes because there was a scuffle because someone pulled a knife, said George Evans. He probably said it like that. The president of Christina's school district's board. He defended the decision, but added that the board might adjust the rules when it comes to younger children like Zachary. Critics contend that zero-tolerance policies like those in Christina district have led to sharp increases in the suspensions and expulsions, often putting children on the streets or in other places where their behaviour only worsens, and the policies that undermine the ability of school officials to use common sense in handling minor infractions. For Delaware, Zachary's case is especially frustrating because last year state lawmakers tried to make disciplinary rules more flexible by giving local boards authority to, on a case-by-case basis, modify the terms of the expulsions. The law was introduced after a third-grade girl was expelled for a year because her grandmother had sent a birthday cake to school along with a knife to cut it. Oh, Jesus. The teacher called the principal, but not before using the knife to cut and serve the cake. Bastards. I'd have taken the cake home. In Zachary's case, the state's new law did not help because it mentions only expulsion and does not explicitly address suppressed suspensions. So they can choose. It's just people being Jobsworth, really. A revised law is being drafted to include suspensions. We didn't want our son becoming the poster child for this, Ms. Christie said, but this is out of control. In a letter to the district's disciplinary committee, State Representative Teresa L. Schooley, Democrat of Newark, wrote, I am asking each of you to consider the situation, get all the facts, find out about Zach and his family, and then act with common sense for the well-being of this child. Seems pretty clear-cut, given that common sense would lead only one way and stop everybody being idiots. Education experts say that zero-tolerance policies initially allowed authorities more leeway in punishing students, but they were applied in a discriminatory fashion. Many studies indicate that African-Americans were several times more likely to be suspended or expelled than other students for the same offences. The result of those studies is that more school districts have removed discretion in applying disciplinary cases to avoid criticism of being biased, said Ronnie Casella, an associate professor of education at the Central Connecticut State University, who has written about school violence. He added that there is no evidence that zero tolerance policies make schools safer. Other school districts are also trying to address the problems. They have stemmed in part from overly strict zero-tolerance policies. In Baltimore, around 10,000 students, around 12% of the city's enrollments, were suspended during the 2006 to 2007 school year, mostly for disruption and insubordination. That's a wide-ranging thing, according to a report by the Open Society Institute Baltimore. School officials there are rewriting the disciplinary code to route students to counselling rather than suspension, or just having a sodding brain cell between the teachers would really, really help. In Milwaukee, where school officials reported that 40% of ninth graders had been suspended at least once in the 2006-07 school year, and the superintendent has encouraged teachers not to overreact to student misconduct, like disagreeing with the teacher or refusing to do something. Something has to change, said Dodie Herbert, whose 13-year-old son Kyle was suspended in May and ordered to attend Christina District Reform School for 45 days after another student dropped a pocket knife in his lap. School officials declined to comment on the case for reasons of privacy. Ms. Herbert, who said her son was a straight-A student, has since been homeschooling him instead of sending him to reform school. There's a neat money-saving thing for local authorities to try in America, isn't it? The Christina School District attracted similar controversy in 2007 when it expelled a 7th grade girl who had used a utility knife to cut the windows out of a paper doll's house for a class project. Charles P. Ewing, a professor in law and psychology at the University of Buffalo Law School, who has written about school safety issues, said he favoured a zero-tolerance approach. There are still serious threats every day in schools, Dr. Ewing said, added that giving school officials discretion holds the potential for discrimination and requires the kind of threat assessment that only law enforcement is equipped to make. The 2005 to 2006 school year, 86% of public schools reported at least one violent crime, theft, or other crime involving the most recent federal, according to the most recent federal survey. And yet federal studies by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and another by the Department of Justice show that the rate of school-related homicide and non-fatal violence has fallen over most of the past decade. Education experts said that the decline is less a result of zero-tolerance policies than other programs like peer mediation, student support groups, and adult mentorships, as well as overall decrease in all forms of crime. For Zachary, it's not school violence that has left him reluctant to return to classes. He says, I just think the other kids may tease me for having been in trouble, he said, pausing before adding, but I think it's the rules that are wrong and not me. Brilliant. That sounds like a really intelligent kid. Don't go back to school. Just get home-tutored. We're going to go into our halftime music now. We've got a new track, Electronica, by Mancheck. You can't get his stuff online. I keep trying to get him to release it online, but he hasn't put it up anywhere where you guys can download it. I like it. I know you guys have told us that you like it before. So here we go, Electronica by Mancheck. No album, no website, but we are trying to change that. Speak to you in a bit. Thank you. And we're back. That's quite weird. It is very weird lying in a hammock in the middle of the woods reading the news. You feel like a right Nana. Yeah, I've been hanging out with my friends who live in the teepee down here. And, yeah, had a pretty eventful night. My new hammock came with storm rings, one of which just decided to shear through its weld point, and I ended up falling on the ground, which was exciting. That's the second time I've come out of a hammock because of a design fault, really. But I'm still out here. I'm nice and calm. Oh, just relaxing. Disturbed every single owl on my climb up the hill. And, yeah, it's relatively warm. I'm taking severe steps last night because it was quite cold. It's going to be down to about, you know, 0 degrees out here tonight. So I'm wearing a couple of base layers and my fleece, and I've got my nice warm ex-military sleeping bag and a big fleece blanket over me, so I should be fairly warm tonight. It's been a fairly cold day, and I haven't been up to much bushcrafting stuff because it's been too cold and miserable. I've just spent it with my friends and then come up here in the dark, which is a fairly unusual sort of thing to want to do, but it keeps me off the streets, I guess. So yeah, you know, lug my pack up the hill. I'm not looking forward to packing everything down, largely because a whole bunch of, I will only presume that they are owls, have taken a huge number of dumps on my tarp, but I suppose that's better than having the owls take a dump on the top of my hammock. Outside of that, it's been fairly uneventful. It was pretty cold last night. I didn't enjoy having to get out of bed in the middle of the night to basically repair my hammock and relash it to the tree. But apart from that, it's been very nice. It's been nice to be sleeping outside. Yesterday when I got here, and by the time I went to bed, I'd been up for about 36 hours, so I really enjoyed getting off to bed. Not much else to say, really. But it's kind of cool to be out here recording something for Rangers. And I'd really like it if, when you guys start camping in the new year, you try and record a few bits for us as well. And we'll paste those in, you know, getting people's experience of being outside and doing some outdoorsy type stuff, which is I'm a big proponent of. Go outdoors, go camping, you know, learn to look after yourself. You know, because even if you go to a campsite, you have to take everything that you need with you. And that's an interesting experience when you start to understand, you know, life without mains electricity and life without, you know, water on tap directly to your house, you know, having to fetch water and, you know, cook for yourself and provide fire and heat and your own shelter gives you an increased and more interesting perspective on life. And I know most of you out there do that, but I'd encourage people to do that as often as possible. So I'm just going to go into Recomedia. Harlequin sent us the link for a 5-minute video on how to make fire using a potato, which is incredible. It's so worth going and having a look at that. It does seem overly much more fussy than, you know, using a lighter or a match or something, but it is interesting. You know, you literally use, what was it? It's toothpaste and something else, I can't remember what it is, in a hollowed out potato, and you mix it together and it put a wire in it and it'll actually generate electricity at one end of the wire and light a cotton ball on fire. That's, you know, fascinating. The Schneelock also sent us the Press Freedom Index, which shows you a graph of how free the press in your country is, which is interesting. The only other thing I've got for you in this episode is Carriers, which is a new movie that's out in the cinema at the moment, which was the most depressing post-apocalyptic road movie I've ever seen. And I've seen most of the sort of like post-apocalyptic road movie type things. But if you don't sort of like, you know, want to look away from the decisions these people have to make about people becoming infected with a lethal disease with no cure after the world has fallen apart as a result from it, I mean, if you don't have to look away at some point in that, you're a tougher person than me. There were some bits in it I genuinely couldn't bear. It was extremely well acted. Specifically, there's one child in it, and the child is an amazing actress. I hope she does really well. So yeah, I haven't got a lot for you. Just my lounging around in the hammock, having a weird time out in the woods, and it raining and being very slippery up and down, you know, going up and down the hill. So it's been pretty scary. But apart from that, I've not been up to a lot. So we're going to go to the outro music. I hope you've enjoyed the show. It should be about 40 minutes, which is 10 minutes longer than the last one. The outro music is Don't Tase Me Bro by Carbon Silicon from the album Carbon Bubble. And this has been your host, V, signing off. As always, go and listen to the Pirate Party Media, the Pirate Party Radio that's being put out by Sumerian over at Rant. And generally listen to everything at Rant. Also, you know, check out things like kevinisageek.org, and worth going and checking out things like, the usual stuff, standovermedia.net, stormthewire.tk, and of course, WOG Network. We haven't heard anything at all from a lot of our other people that we like. I mean, it would be really, really nice if we could hear from WOG Rant. I really, really miss Wasn't Me, and I haven't seen him in the IRC for a long time. And if you want to go into the IRC, you can get to the IRC at irc.freenode.net, and the room is #r4ngeer5. Come and have a chat. It'll be brilliant to hear from you, especially if we're getting some new listeners and people. So hopefully we've got a few new people that are going to be listening. Especially welcome to the guys that I bumped into one of the times I was camping in the autumn, who came up and, you know, sat and had a chat with me for a long time up where my hammock and tarp are. You know who you are, and I look forward to hearing from you. Look forward to seeing you in the IRC as well. So take care, and I'll speak to you soon. This is V signing off.
Time. Some say that he's an arsehole, of the first guy to ask the question. Pinned to the floor in the Bush-Kerry election. But electric cattle prod is a lethal weapon, you know. They did it to Phil Spector, but don't taser me, bro.
Don't taser me, bro. All I wanted to know is taking over the country. Don't taser me, bro.
Osborne's the closest thing we have to an in-house investigator.
And here you are going out of house. Now, how's that make you feel, Jules?
Hostile and uncooperative, sir.
Fantastic.